And welcome to the Lonely Triathlete. I am the Lonely Triathlete, Todd Sauter. And in this episode, I want to talk to you about thoughts I've had about various topics while I'm running. You could call this podcast Water, Sweat, and Fluids. Well, that sounds kind of gross for some reason, but that's what came to mind. So running, our bodies are incredible machines, are they not? I mean, I can't believe how far and how fast I can run now than when I first started out like 21 years ago. It's absolutely fascinating to me that I can now bang off a two-hour run without that much effort. I mean, I know it's an effort, but there was a day in my life where I couldn't run more than 30 minutes. So the fact that I can run 2 hours now is like absolutely crazy. Now, of course, keep in mind, everything I'm talking to you guys about is in respect of an Olympic distance athlete. So I know there are Iron Men and Iron Women out there who a 2 hour run is just your warm up, right? I've been there. 2 hours is just to kind of get the juices flowing, get the muscles warmed up, do a little stretching, and then do your main set, which is like 3 or 4 or 5 hours, or whatever you're doing. I know, that's just like another level. So I get it. If you're in that realm, things I say, you're going to laugh at, but I get it. So, I mean, for myself, I started out as a pure runner. I was under 30, I think I was in my late 20s, and I thought I should do some running, kind of get some exercise. I was a gym rat. So I do cardio for 20 minutes, but I never did anything endurance related. So I thought, well, I may as well do some running. So I read some blogs about how to get running. And I would do 15 minutes or 20 minute run. I would stretch that to a 25 minute run, then 30 and 35 minutes and 40. And I was just amazed that I could not run more than 20 minutes when I first started. And with, you know, consistent effort, I got that up to, you know, double that time. But then I started getting terrible shin splints. Now, in retrospect, I probably got the shin splints because I was running too much, you know, too frequently, too far, too often, the whole shebang. I was so excited about this whole running sport. So I got these shin splints and I went to my chiropractor. And he said, oh, you should get orthotics. And, oh, okay, well, how much are those? You know, Dr. Scholes? He goes, oh, no, Dr. Scholes, you want custom orthotics. So he had me walk on this treadmill, essentially. Actually, no, it wasn't moving. It was just a mat on the floor. And I think, I remember now, the technology was called FootMax. FootMax, M-A-X-X. And you walk across this mat and it shows the pressure points and how you roll your foot and whether you're a pronator or a supinator or neutral. And then from them, then they create these hard, these rigid orthotics that you would put into your shoes. And they cost like $300. I'm talking in the 90s, $300, 1990s money. That was a lot of money. And my insurance, I thought my insurance would pay for it because they covered orthotics, but apparently not these ones. So I remember shelling out $300 and you're supposed to replace them every, I don't know, 3 years, something like that. I think I used these for 10 years. I was convinced, or my chiropractor convinced me that I was a terrible overpronator and I needed these orthotics. And I have to admit, they worked. My shin splints went away. Now, I don't know if that's a combination of the orthotics and me just learning how to train better, but whatever. I just saw that my legs weren't exactly geared towards running 4 times a week. I was reading these articles about, and I get it, they're probably top elite runners. They'd run like 4, 5, 6 days a week. Like, honestly, if I ran 10 minutes, 5 days a week, I think I'd be wrecked, at least at that time in my life. My legs, I have glass legs apparently. I can run twice a week, but if I run 3 days a week, I might be setting myself up for trouble. And that's been true for the last 20 years. fact, my running, I only run twice a week, and bike twice a week, and swim twice a week, and usually throw in a gym session once or twice a week. So I guess I really do have glass legs, but I was getting frustrated with this, potential injury that's always around the corner with me and my running. And then I saw on TV an Ironman, and I thought, that is insane. These people are swimming, 3.8 kilometers, then biking 180K, and then running a marathon. It seemed insane, but I watched the body types and I looked at the people and I thought, I think this is just like running. You can train yourself to be able to do this. So, yeah, I got hooked on the whole idea of triathlon. And the long range plan was one day doing an Ironman. So, this is back in 2000. And so I started to train. I found some, training program online. I just started following it. And I did my first Olympic distance triathlon in Kelowna. At that time, it was the Apple Triathlon. I think it's still the Apple. I can't remember who the sponsor was, though, because these days the sponsor is Subaru. But back then it was sponsored by somebody else. But anyway, I did my first Olympic distance triathlon in 3 hours and 15 minutes. And oh, it was awesome. I made a complete rookie mistake. At the very end of the race, you had to run a lap around the track, and then the finish line was at the end of the track. And I was just so happy to be done that I didn't look over my shoulder, and some guy in my age group was behind me and outsprinted me. I didn't even know he was behind me. And he passed me with like 50 meters to go. So I dropped a place in my age group because I didn't realize there was a guy behind me. I think I could have stayed ahead of him if I only knew that he was there. But anyway, I learned a race strategy, a tactic, slash, whatever you want to call it, a mistake at that moment in my early triathlon training career. So I was totally hooked on triathlon at that point. So it got me thinking as I was running on Thursday. I had a long run in my schedule, about 1 hour and 25. I ended up doing about 14K. I was wondering, what type of running do I really like? Because to me, there's no easy running. It makes me laugh when I see in my training plan, oh, Sunday's a 30-minute easy run. I go, okay, it's not easy. I'm sorry. The moment I get out there and start going, my hips are a little bit achy, and it's not easy. So I've learned over the years, I think what they mean is easy relative to harder, right? I accept no run is easy. I mean, easy is laying on the couch and watching Netflix. That's easy. So you say, oh, go for an easy run. Well, it's a misnomer, if you ask me. But I started asking myself, like, which runs do I actually prefer? Because the long ones, it's called the hour and a half run, the speed at which I'm running is so slow relative to, interval work and other fast stuff, that first half hour or 40 minutes, it almost feels guiltily easy. And then the pain starts, right? And then, halfway through, you start thinking, oh, I'm getting a little tired. My legs are feeling a little heavy. And then an hour in, my hip flexors start to stiffen up. And by an hour 10, I'm having to focus on keeping my form. By an hour 20, it's all I can do to just keep the pace rather than slowing to a stop or to a walk. So the pain in these long runs comes near the end. Super easy in the beginning, and then increasingly difficult towards the end. And you feel this fatigue. It's like the muscles are just getting ground down over time. Versus tempo runs or VO2 max runs I do on the track, where after a warm up, I do the first, whatever it is, usually it's 30 seconds, and then a couple weeks later, you're doing more 30 second, I wouldn't call them sprints, but 9 of the 10 effort, like a 5K pace, maybe slightly faster than 5K. And then you go to a minute efforts at the 5K pace. But those efforts at the beginning, I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if I could do 10 of these. I could do three of them, but number four, five, and six are going to be slower, and seven, eight, nine, 10 are probably going to be the slowest yet. Now, I've learned pacing strategies so that that doesn't happen, so that all of the intervals are within a few seconds of each other. That's a skill that you just have to learn after doing. But the pain of those intervals, of those runs, happens early, and then it kind of sustains itself throughout the workout. So I wonder what kind of runs you guys enjoy, given that they're all painful, but they're painful in different kinds of ways. So my answer for myself, the runs I like the best are the short, fast ones, because they're short. I can mentally tell myself, I can bear down, Todd, you got this, you're a machine, nothing's gonna stop you. I mean, you can run for 20 minutes hard, can't you? Absolutely. And then it's over. Versus the long ones, it's the last, 30 minutes, I'm telling myself, oh, are you kidding me? Like, I feel like I'm doing damage. Anyhow, I guess to each their own. And I don't know about you guys, but that first 10 minutes of the run, is to me, that's the worst. I don't care how long I've been running or in what part of my training schedule I'm in, those first 10 minutes, I feel like I'm not a runner. I feel like I've lost all my fitness. I feel like I, like, 'cause it hurts. Like, it's just everything just aches and ugh. And then about 10 minutes in, things start to loosen up, things start to warm up, and by 15 minutes, that's when I'm warmed up. It takes me at least 15 minutes to feel actually prepared to run, and then whatever I do is fine. I feel like a runner. I feel like a superstar. I feel like, amazing. But those first 10 to 15 minutes, now I feel like I'm starting fresh all over again. What if you guys also feel the same way? Joys of finding a good track. It's really important for these intervals, I find, to get a track that's close to home. So you can either run there for your warm up, or it doesn't take you 45 minutes to drive there because you'll never do it. And that the quality of the track is good. So cinder, why is everyone so in love with cinder? Oh, it's a cinder track. So easy on your legs. Yeah, people, running is not easy on your legs. Never. I don't care. Cinder track, hard track, rubber track. But people love cinder tracks. So I went out in search of a cinder track here in Vancouver, and I found one out in Stanley Park. And yeah, I mean, it was fine to run on. It was very, very fine gravel, and I had a great time running on it. Came back a week later, and there were like weeds up to my knees on this thing. So obviously not maintained. And then it had rained, and there were little ruts and standing water pools here and there. So I was like weaving all over the track to avoid the weeds and avoid the water puddles. And that was when it occurred to me, I don't think I like cinder block. So I kept looking. Then I found a school that I have to drive to because it's about a 15-minute drive, but it's the rubberized track. So it has a really nice feel to it. It's a blue rubberized track. Happens to be very popular with all the running groups in Vancouver, which is a bit of a pet peeve because it's a public track. So how can you just show up with your 10 people and take four of the six lanes? Or sorry, there's eight lanes. Take six of the eight lanes for your 10 people or your 15 people even. They have signs up saying lanes one and two are for you. And we've got the whole rest of the track. So I'm like, well, I don't know, like, did you pay money? Like, I pay my taxes, you pay your taxes, but you get to take the whole track. Now, worst part of it for me is they're not running the whole time. I mean, if they were using the track, maybe part of my brain would say, okay, Todd, well, it's for safety. You don't want to get run over by these people. And you don't want to interrupt their workout, and you don't want them to interrupt your workout. But they spend literally of an hour that I'm running on this track, they spend 40 minutes on the infield, stretching, doing dynamic workouts, talking to their coaches, and then they do some, you know, they do some weird exercises on the track, and then they go back to the infield. So it's like, oh, you've taken up, you know, more than 3/4 of the track. Or actually, you've taken up exactly 3/4 of the track for to not use it. Weird. Anyway, a little rant for me on track etiquette. Oh, there's the people that run the wrong way on the track. So you're blasting around, you know, doing your 5K intervals, and then someone's coming the other direction in your lane. It's like, do you not see that everybody here is running the same direction around the track? So, I don't know. Beginners. So I called this podcast Fluids, Water, Sweat, you name it. And part of that topic is what we drink on a long run. First of all, what constitutes a long run? I guess that's very relative. So it depends on what you're training for. Again, you Iron Men, Iron Women, your long run is going to be, you know, 2-3 hours. Whereas my long run, actually the longest run that I ever do for Olympic training is 1.5 hours. But quite typically the runs are about 45 minutes, like somewhere in there. And for me, I'm a heavy sweater. Like I sweat quickly and I a lot, I guess. I'd say a moderate to heavy sweater, but I am a very salty sweater. I did a half Ironman back in 2006 or 2007. And when I was done, I thought there was like cotton in the air, because every time I'd scratch my cheek, there'd be cotton flying in the air. And I realized that's not cotton. That's my face. Or that's salt coming off my face. I thought it was skin actually. But it was just, it was dried salt just caked on my face. But it took me years to put 2 and 2 together and realize, since I'm a relatively heavy sweater, not only do I need to take a lot of water in on my workouts, but I should also take extra, you know, sodium, extra electrolytes. It took me years to figure that out. Now, part of it is when you're a short course or long course athlete like I am, you don't really get into electrolyte trouble. Unlike, say, iron, say half iron or Ironman distance, you are going to get in trouble through, you know, from a lot of things. But when I do the Olympic training, I don't really get into electrolyte trouble, but I started to experiment recently with these goo salt tabs. And they're just little pills. And I take them with my Gatorade and I dump in 1 or 2 of these extra salt tablets into my Gatorade. I don't even taste it. They, whatever they've done, they've made it very palatable. And I, maybe it's placebo effect, but I feel like the extra salt and magnesium and other stuff they put in there, potassium, I feel like it helps me. I've yet to cramp in the long run. Not that I really ever did, but I guess I can't prove it even to myself, except to say I feel differently now that I take extra salt on my runs, especially in the super, super hot weather. I just feel like I've got more energy. I don't feel as dizzy or as lightheaded. And this could all be in my head, but I don't think so, because there is science behind it. And I read a number of articles, went online and took a quiz or took a survey, and they said, oh, you're a salty, heavy sweater. You should take this much sodium. So I started doing what they said, and so far it's been really working well for me. So I encourage you guys, if you've not experimented with extra electrolytes, experiment. See if it makes any difference to you. See if you have a bit more stamina at the end of your long runs. If you've got any trouble cramping, see if it helps to eliminate the cramping. But use your body as a lab and try it out. It's pretty cool. At least my experience has been, it's pretty cool just by adding a bit of salt to my drinks, what it's done for me. Speaking of drinks and whatnot, it's very important to figure out how much you sweat in an hour. I used to just figure this stuff out on the fly, use my intuition. It served me well for the most part. But as I started training longer and longer, it became more and more important for me to figure out how fast or how much sweat I lost in an hour. Turns out on a normal day, say 20 to 22 degrees Celsius and a moderately difficult run, like maybe a 7 or 8 out of 10 in terms of perceived exertion, I lose a liter an hour. And I figured this out by weighing myself naked before I ran. And then running and drinking all the stuff that I drink, and then come back and weigh myself again, and figuring if I drank a liter an hour, but I still weighed less after my run, then I must have gone through more than a liter of liquid. And then I just replaced that with water over the next hour or so. So I think it's a good idea to check your sweat rate, just so you can know how much you're sweating. Because if you lose more than, I've read, if you lose more than 2% of your body weight in fluids, it can start to be detrimental on your performance. So take your body weight, take 2% off. You can't lose much more than that in terms of weight, or else you're going to be in trouble. You do the math, figure out how much water you have to take with you. So my general rule is any run under an hour, I don't really bring any water. Any runs around an hour, I drink just water. Any runs over an hour, I bring Gatorade because it's got the electrolytes in it and it's got some calories. Any runs over an hour and a half, I also bring gels for the extra calories. Try to get, 30 to 60 grams of carbohydrates in me per hour. And what's with the gel flavors these days, hey? I was at Mac, it's a local outdoor equipment store here in Vancouver, and they had, I'm going to take a wild guess now from imagination, they must have had 15 different flavors of gel. And every one of these gels had a different profile in terms of amino acids, caffeine or no caffeine, sodium, electrolyte balance. Like, it was crazy. And the flavors was off the charts in terms of how you could customize your caffeine and electrolytes, even just in the gels that you take. So I just grabbed a whole bunch. And to be honest, I can't tell the difference. Lemon lime with 2,500 milligrams of amino acids and 40 grams of caffeine versus blueberry raspberry with no caffeine and different amounts of crap in it. I can't tell the difference. But I tell you, I do feel the difference when I take a gel about every half an hour on a longer run. Again, could be placebo effect. I'd have to dive into the studies to see, oh no, the science supports it. But I just feel so much better taking a gel every half an hour if my runs are going to be around an hour and a half or any longer than that. Which reminds me of that half Ironman I alluded to earlier. I remember it was a very hot day, 38 degrees Celsius. And they ran out of water. And they ran out of Gatorade at the aid stations. No, sorry, they ran out of Gatorade, not water. So I was just drinking water only. I dropped my gels on the road somewhere. And I was desperate for a gel halfway through this half marathon. And there in the sunlight, as I was running down the shoulder of this baking hot highway, I saw a gel package. Someone had dropped their gel pack. So I picked it up. And it was 3,000 degrees in my hand. And I ripped the top off. I didn't care. And I poured this molten lava into my mouth. And it was like ham and cheese flavored. I don't even know. I didn't even look at the flavor. But oh my gosh, it tasted like someone's leftover dinner. But 5 minutes later, I had tons of energy again. And was able to pick my run pace up. So I was really suffering there until that gel hit my system. So those things actually do work. What am I saying? There's no placebo effect. These things work. Science is there. My experience is there. Speaking of Gatorade, why do running stores hate it so much? Is it because they can't make money on it? Because they don't sell it? They sell these more expensive brands? I mean, I get it. Gatorade's kind of like the Coca-Cola of electrolyte drinks. Oh, it's all that artificial color that they put in. It's so bad for you. Yeah, maybe. I mean, it seems like it probably is bad for me, but is it really bad for me? Where's the science that says that little orange food coloring is going to kill me? I think it's more the fact that they don't sell it there. They sell the stuff that's like five times as much. So there's my little rant about Gatorade. I think it's good. People hate it. It's bad for you. I don't know. It works for me, and it's cheap. So that's why I like it. Here's something that happened to me. I wonder if this has ever happened to any one of you, because this was a shock to me and a surprise to me. Lately, over the last 2 years, I've been training a lot more indoors. I always run outside, even if it's raining, but I've been doing most of my biking indoors. And I sweat the stinkiest sweat about a year ago. And it got me concerned because it smelled like ammonia. And I mean, I've sweat for years and years and years. I've never smelt that acrid stench of ammonia before. So I just, you know, I ignored it. Went, wow, it's one of those weird things. Maybe my towel didn't get washed properly, or maybe something weird, detergent is in my towel. Then a week or two later, I did it again. I had a really sweaty indoor cycling session, and my towel reeked of ammonia. So I Googled it, and apparently, if you don't have enough protein in your system, and you go on a pretty hard run cycle, the body converts ammonia from your muscles into something, and you know, whatever the compound is that it creates, uric acid, I'm making that up, whatever the compound it creates, oh, ammonia, clearly, it creates ammonia as a byproduct. And that's an indication that you don't have enough protein in your diet, or you don't have enough protein in your system for when you're working out. So what I started doing, and this is a miracle cure, by the way, I just make sure 45 minutes before I do an exercise, I have a little smoothie. In my smoothie, I throw in 15, 20 grams of protein, whey protein, and I haven't had that disgusting sweat happen ever since. So it's like a wonderful cure. Now, I don't know if it's bad for you to excrete ammonia, but it's gross. So I don't smell like a chemical plant anymore when I work out, because I have my protein. Another little thought that I had the other day was, it irritates me when I'm running and the sweat is just pouring in my eyes. I've tried all the mental tricks of accepting it, like, yeah, I'm a warrior, and the sweat's pouring in my eyes, and it's stinging so much I can't even see. I'm so hardcore. And I, you know, scrub my eyes with my hands, and, oh, man, I'm a hardcore warrior. Oh, the sweat's burning. It's burning. I love it. No, I hate it. So I finally looked up, you know, how do you keep sweat out of your eyes? And people are like, headband? You ever heard of these things? You ever seen people wear these things called headbands, Todd? So there's a company called Halo that makes headbands that, you know, the rage. And I just grabbed their cheapest version, like their version one. And it's literally a headband that you tie in the back of your head made of a material that absorbs a fair, decent amount of sweat, but it has a flexible piece of rubber that presses up against your forehead over your eyebrow ridge. And the idea is that as the sweat pours off your head and hits that rubber barrier, that it channels it away from the center of your face, and then it drips like down your temples. And I have to say, it works about 80% as much as I hoped that it would. Now, I've got thick eyebrows, and I'm blaming my eyebrows, because all this sweat will accumulate in my eyebrows, which is below the headband, and eventually it releases into my eyes, but much, much less than it used to, because the sweat from my head is being channeled with this band. So if you guys are out there looking for a solution to keep some sweat out of your eyes, Halo, check it out on Amazon. It was like $15. Cheaper if you're American. These are $15 Canadian. And I had this thing delivered in a couple days. And now I'm like a headband guy. So that's kind of fun. My last thought before I end this podcast is about shoes. Don't you hate it when your favorite shoe brand changes the shoe that you've worn for a couple years in such a way that it just doesn't fit your foot anymore? I don't know why they tinker so much, but I found shoes that were like a second skin to my feet. I loved them, part of my family. And I buy this brand for 2, 3, 4 years. And then year 5, it felt like I had like iron clogs on. Like, what's going on? Oh, they completely changed something. And now those shoes are done. You have to go back to the drawing board, try on different pairs. Maybe you get lucky and you find the next pair fits great. Or you get unlucky, you have to go through a couple different brands. And then you find that brand. You find that model. Oh, feels great. Oh, finally I found a pair of shoes I love again. And then 2, 3 years later, they change it again. It's like, ah, oh, so every 3 years I'm having to find a different type of shoe. But my current shoe that I highly recommend if you're into the very, very cushiony type shoes is ASICS Nimbus. Now they're the more expensive brand. I think they're $200 Canadian, brand new. But they are like running on pillows. And I love that. Oh, but Todd, the softer they are, the slower you are in your race. Yeah, whatever. I don't care. So I'm gonna lose 5 seconds over a 10K. I don't care. I want comfort and I want to train and race in the same shoe because I'm not made of money. So I bought these ASIC Nimbus and they were so awesome. And then one day I had a brain fart and I bought a new pair for a new season. And I thought, oh, I'm standing in the store looking at Nimbus and looking at Cumulus. And I thought, oh, I think I had the ASIC Cumulus because it was like a cloud, a cumulus cloud. They were so fluffy and awesome. So I bought these ASIC Cumulus shoes and they were a step below the Nimbus. They were not as good as the Nimbus. So just this is a friendly advice. ASIC Nimbus, go for the more expensive one. It's the cushier one. And if you like cushy shoes, you'll be very, very happy. All right. Well, you know what? I promised these podcasts would be kind of on the short side. So don't really want to go much over half an hour. I want to leave you with this thought. If you're exercising right now, your body is an amazing thing. Look what you're doing right now. And I'll tell you, most people aren't doing what you're doing right now. Most people never do what you're doing right now. No matter how slow you think you may be, how infrequent you're doing what you're doing, you're already well ahead of most people. And this is good for two things. One, it's great for your performance because you don't get faster, you don't get better unless you do it. So the fact that you're out there exercising means you're on the road to improvement. But two, if nothing else, it's going to make you healthier, right? Action, activity, motion, getting that heart rate up, it's going to make you healthier. So you're not only getting faster and better, but you're actually investing in your health. So good job. Well done. I hope you're not feeling too lonely if you're out there by yourself. I'm the Lonely Triathlete, and I am saying until next time, have a great day.